Hi guys, it's Stuart from the Film Reel Cast. We have yet another film from our vault of podcasts. This one was recorded back in 2018. It's 2011's The Raid. Written and directed by Gareth Evans, starring Iko Uwais. An amazing martial arts film, really intense. There aren't many better films around this day in the modern decade that's as good as The Raid. The Raid 2 is equally as good, if not better. Okay, enjoy this. It's an audio podcast, so there's no video. It's just that you can sit back, chill out, relax, and listen to this. Subscribe to us on YouTube and follow us on iTunes and on Android, the Film Reel Cast. Okay, thanks everyone for supporting us. Thanks everyone for your feedbacks. You can email us at thefilmreelcast @gmail.com or follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at thefilmreelcast and leave a message. Join in the conversation. It's been really good lately. Thanks to everyone who's left comments. I hope you enjoy this podcast. Thanks for your support and we'll be back soon.
And fingers crossed, but welcome back to the Film Reelcast, where I think we're recording over Skype now for the first time in over a year, I believe.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm very good, Stu. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm very good. I'm very interested to find out what your thoughts are going to be on this week's film choice.
Yes, yes. The Raid. The Raid.
Before we get into that, I've seen another film.
Oh, yeah?
Went to the cinema. And I saw A Simple Favour.
A Simple Favour?
With Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively.
Oh, and?
And I was very disappointed.
Oh.
I was really, really looking forward to the film. Really was, because I like Anna Kendrick, Blake Lively. Both extremely attractive. It's a very... It's a stylish film. It really is. But towards the end, the plot gets extremely stupid. It gets really, really drawn out.
Oh, really?
And it just becomes very boring and predictable. Yeah, which is, I was so disappointed.
Oh, I'm genuinely sorry, Stu, for that.
Well, it costs nothing to see, so it wasn't a problem. But it was just, I was looking forward to it, because there have been some real shit films that I've seen lately, and it's been really disappointing going to the cinema. I mean, the only good films I've seen lately is Searching, which was really, really good.
Searching?
Yeah, which was kind of a budget film about a father looking for his daughter. That was full of plot twists. Really enjoyed that. But films like, what did I see? Like The Nun and films like that, which I thought was going to be really scary, which turned out to be absolutely terrible when I mentioned on previous podcasts that it's just not been a good few months for films at the cinema. They've just been so disappointing and they've been so predictable as well. I think Mission Impossible was the last really good kind of mainstream film that you kind of weren't expecting it to be good, and it actually lived up to like all the hype.
Yeah.
But before, it's just been really clever editing on the trailers where they've kind of sold you into a film that it turns out not to be and it's absolute shine. It's been really disappointing. But I don't know. I think the next good film, the next film I will go and see, actually, King of Thieves with Michael Caine, which I don't think will do well abroad, because I don't think they'll really follow what the film was, like the story was about. Obviously, the Hatton Gardens heist for all the diamonds and all the cash and everything else. And I don't think it was really big news abroad.
Oh.
But I think it's for the old cast with Tom Finney and Michael Caine and Ray Winston. It's got some really good old like British actors in who you don't really see on the big screen. And they really, it's great to see them. And they're proper Cockney lads. I mean, the language is really, really foul, but it's all matches their character and it matches the story. And I found that really, really good. But it got slated by a lot of the critics, which I was really surprised and disappointed about. But I really enjoyed that. But I mean, the next big thing, you got obviously Venom coming out, which I hope is a good film. I really,
definitely,
really hope that Tom Hardy does a good Venom, because it'll be interesting to see what they do after that.
I think we can review that. There is a reason, because I think I'm watching that at the cinema as well.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
I'll definitely do that. Definitely. It needs to do well. I really hope it does.
Yeah, we could do, because I think myself and a couple of people at work are having a competition on something like positive outcomes, let's say, for short. And myself and my colleague are currently beating Simon, one of my friends, who's going to be here for the Batman a particular Justice review. But yeah, yes, yes, we're currently beating them in positive outcomes. When Simon and his friends said they're better people than us.
Is that because they're DC or what? Is it a DC kind of Marvel versus? Is it?
No. It's just it's simply a good person versus a hole. So there we go. I'm not saying who the a holes are. It's probably us, if I'm honest.
But do you think Venom's going to do well, or do you think it's going to be overhyped as usual?
Trailers, awesome, aren't they? Let's be honest. The trailers are really, really good. Yeah. So a massive, like, 5 stars for the marketing team. Now the movie has to match it. Will it? I think it's got a very good chance. It's a very good chance of doing it. Put it this way, Stu. I'm more hopeful with the Venom than I have been any other Spider-Man films of late.
Really?
Yeah, but that's just by judging by the trailer and going into it. The first trailer for Venom I did not like at all.
So Homecoming, did you not like that?
I have not seen Homecoming, apart from Homecoming.
Oh, and you're making judgment. You're not seeing that.
I've not. No, so I'm basing it on basically the.
Oh, you can't go on the Tobey Maguire and the Andrew Garfield ones. I mean, yeah, but they were terrible.
I thought the first two Tobey Maguire ones were okay.
I didn't like him. I just didn't like Tobey Maguire. He's just, he didn't have any character as Peter Parker. He was so boring.
Really?
I just couldn't be invested in it. And he's such a fucking freak. And like, for him to actually pull a girl like he pulled, just rubbish. So, no, I just didn't like it at all. And I was so pleased that it actually went as toilet as it did. And
what, the amazing, the it. Amazing, which one out of the two?
Both. What was the one where he started dancing in the bar?
Oh no, don't. Oh my god, Spider-Man 3, that was horrible.
That
I agree
was
with you.
Awful.
No, the first two, the origin story and the one with Dr. Octopus in, I thought were really good.
What, do you think he's better than Andrew Garfield? If you had to pick either one of them to come back as a Spider-Man, it had to be either one of them. Which one would you go for?
Neither. I don't know. Oh, no, I don't know. I thought Andrew Garfield was a better Peter Parker, but I thought Tobey Maguire was possibly a better Spider-Man. But then I think for the first two films, Tobey Maguire was lucky because he had the better scripts.
Yeah.
Which may have made a difference. I probably would choose Andrew Garfield with whoever wrote the first two scripts for the first two Spider-Mans, though. Because I think he played Peter Parker with more of a nerd, how he should be.
Yeah, I'd go with Andrew Garfield, definitely. And but there's not much competition, but I'd definitely go with Andrew Garfield. So,
But I do think Tobey Maguire could be the next Iron Man.
Fuck off. Don't even,
That was pure rage. That was pure rage.
Fucking ridiculous. I'd be so fucked off if they did something as stupid as that.
I've got a question for you there.
I really would.
In a world where Robert Downey did not exist, who would be Iron Man, do you think?
I don't even know. I couldn't even imagine anyone who's got that much charisma and
Val
who could
Kilmer.
Just do that.
Yeah,
you know, it'd have to be someone. I mean, you've got someone like Ryan Reynolds who's Deadpool.
Yeah.
And he's just brilliant. And they don't come along very often, people like that. And I honestly don't know who could just play that character. What about you?
No, because I'm struggling. To be fair, I asked that question without even knowing the answer myself. And now I'm actually struggling quite badly to think of who the hell that would be.
Exactly. But I'm really, really intrigued. Let's get on with The Raid. I mean, The Raid, it's really bizarre, yeah? The Raid 2011. And what amazes me, when I first watched it, I was blown away by this film. I saw the trailers for it, and I didn't watch it when it first came out. I was quite late towards it. And what amazed me was Gareth Evans, a Welsh man, actually directed it, wrote it, edited it.
Really?
Produced it. I mean, it's really bizarre. I would have never put me in. After directing a small budget film called Footsteps, it was brought up in South Wales. He got asked, because his wife is of Asian descent, she was pissed off of him sitting around on his ass and not going to his full potential. So she spoke to some people in Indonesia.
Yeah.
About promoting her husband, who's a movie director. So they sent a couple of the films over that he's directed. And he was asked to come over to Indonesia to do a documentary about Indonesian martial arts, which is that Penak Silat. And whilst he was over there filming it, that's when he met Aku Weiss, who plays Rama in this. And he was so blown away by the character, the dedication. And he said there was just some things. I watched the interviews on YouTube.
Okay.
He said there was just something about, he had such charisma that he said to him, you're going to be a star. And he signed him on to a 5-year contract. So, and he obviously made his documentary. Then in 2009, he made his first feature film, which is Marantu, which is, it's got in it, it's got Aku Weiss and it's got Yaya Ryan, who plays Mad Dog. And it's a cult film, and it did win some awards over in kind of like the equivalent to the Cannes Film Festival over in Indonesia. As a bit of a slow film, but the martial arts at the end. And I actually watched it. I found a copy of it on the internet. And it's a good film. It's quite a slow film, but it's a good film. From there onwards, that's when he started to put pen to paper and started to make The Raid, which came out in 2011. And Aku Weiss, who plays Rama, as I said, he's an expert at this martial arts, which I've never heard of before. I started looking into this, called Penak Silat, which is it's a martial arts which involves grappling, throwing, and using weaponry, and you use every single part of your body to attack and defend as well. And it's a martial arts which is only kind of cultural to Indonesia. And it was really, really interesting listening to interviews from the Yayan and Aku Weiss as well, about, because they did the choreography for the Raid 1 and the Raid 2 as well, because they're both fully competent. And Yayan, he's a trainer and referee in Penak Silat as well. So they're both kind of formidable fighters in it. And the guy who plays Mad Dog, who's absolutely brilliant in the Raid and the Raid 2, he went over to Belgium, went over to France and Holland, and he learned further martial arts techniques like karate and aikido, and he is also a referee as well. So they're both fully competent, which is, and you can see that throughout this film, and the other people are in this film who have got various martial arts styles, like the guy, for instance, with the massive machete, the black guy, he's a former world champion in judo. So you've got these people who are bringing a lot of different skills to the table, which I think really enhances these films and the fight scenes. I mean, Aku Weiss was a driver for a telecom company in Indonesia when he was discovered.
Okay.
He did the Penak Silat part-time, and he went on to be like a part-time stuntman, then onto an actor. So, I mean, it's brilliant. The story behind this, how a Welshman went over there to film a documentary, to actually meeting these people and making two of the best films, from my own point of view, action films that I've seen. And he did another one called Bullethead, which is on Netflix as well, which has only got the Aku Weiss in. And it's not a great film. It's an okay film. But, it's just... It's crazy. This all comes from a Welshman. It's not Indonesian, which you'd think. I think by the way it's set, the way it's filmed, the style of it, it comes across very B-movie Indonesian.
It director. Does. It did. But then there's like a couple of scenes, and I'm sure we'll get into one scene in particular, which I thought was the shot, the editing and the way it was shot was the whole scene. I think it only lasted about 5 minutes. Was, for me, the best... one of the best in the film, and it didn't even involve fighting.
Okay, that'll be interesting. But I mean, the budget for this film was 1.1 million. It was limited release on only a very few cinemas, obviously, because the actors not being known, the director not being known, and being an Indonesian film with subtitles, it still made 4.1 million. So when you look at it like that, it was a huge success, which obviously led to the second one being made, and it went really, really damn well with the critics. Of being the only problem they had was mm-hmm. that some people thought the film was just too violent, and that's what put them off.
The only problem I have with the film, which sounds really, really weird in a way. There's two issues. I enjoyed it, those two. One of them was it almost felt like you can't have too much of a good thing, but maybe sometimes you can. Is the fight scenes all were really, really, really were really good. I thought some of them were so good, but they might have been a bit too similar up until the last fight, which is really different. You know, when the two brothers obviously ganged up against Mad Dog. And it felt to me that sometimes you can't have too much of a good thing, which is why I'm glad, because when I was getting halfway through, I was like, well, it's not really that much of a storyline to it, and at the time, I felt that some of the it's just an excuse for potentially another fight scene, which I thought. But then when I was watching it, I thought I'm being a bit unfair to this film then, because I'm not going into it expecting it to be some epic like Star Wars or Rocky storyline driven. No. You know, and at that point, I took a step back and thought, well, that's being a bit unfair to the film as a whole, because I'm expecting something from it, which is not, which is why on the second time round, I thought I'm just going to watch it for the fight scenes, and the fight scenes are really, really, are really, really amazing, and there's not too much of, like you got, for example, in The Dark Knight, the Batman, there's not too much shaky cam, which I like a bit of. But I can't stand a lot of. So and it was very, very quick. The editing was very, very quick in the fights. But for I'd probably say 90% of the fights, you could still understand what was going on, which is sometimes a problem in these fast-paced fight films, and they were shot really well.
But a lot of it was filmed on kind of handheld cameras as well, especially
the
bit.
It didn't look like the classic like shaky cam, for example. You know when you know the Transformers films.
Yeah,
you only see an action sequence and the camera's shaking, and you've got all that going on, and you don't know what the hell's happening. That's what I mean, you know, when you watch that. And with this one, even though it was with the handheld cameras, it wasn't the classic shaky cam. Like when they do the shaky cam, it's almost like they want you to be there in the within the violence, and it wasn't that look. It wasn't that like as if someone's like got hold of their iPhone and recording, which you sometimes get.
Yeah, well, I watched. It's funny you say that. Is it Mile 22, the Mark Wahlberg film that's just come out?
Oh yeah.
A lot of the fight scenes in there, it's got that shaky cam, and you just can't work out who's kicking who.
No.
And
there you go. That's exactly where they are. Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. And in this one, you can. Yeah. Whether they were using the shaky cam or not, too. I didn't feel it didn't take away from the film, where sometimes I think a lot of the fight scenes in films, that maybe it's because we do this podcast, but it starts to annoy me quite quickly when there's too much.
Oh, it does. But if you watch, go onto YouTube and watch the making of it, that part where Rama cuts through the floor with an axe and he jumps through the floor to go and stick up for his colleague, that part is all done in one bit. As he jumps through the floor, they pull the camera down through the floor and they carry on filming.
Oh, that is, oh, wow.
It's just so good. But I mean, as you say about the plot, I mean, let's go on with the plot. It's the quick plot summary. In Jakarta, Indonesia, Lieutenant Wayu organizes invasion of an apartment building. That's a safe house of a powerful, cruel drug lord, Tama, and his gang. The team breaks into the building, but one of the lookouts sees them, warns the gangsters of the police arrival, and they're trapped on the seventh floor. They learn that Lieutenant Wire is not informed his supervisors of the operation, and now the police officers have to fight with limited ammunition against the armed and dangerous gangsters. That's really, apart from there's a couple of extra little bits, that's the story, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's not the biggest story in the world. There is a bit of double crossing, which you kind of like expect, but I was still surprised as the way it kind of went down.
The story starts off where you see it's a special tactics officer. That's what they are, a special forces kind of film, where you see Rama at home. He's praying and you see him practicing the silat on his own. And he says goodbye to his wife, who's pregnant with his. You learn that it's his first child. And you instantly I did question when I first watched it, questioned it, and it reminded me when I watched it again that when his dad says to him, promise you bring him home. And did you pick up on that? Did you question what he meant by that?
I didn't know what he meant by that until now, funnily enough.
When you say, still don't know now.
Promise you'll bring him home. He means obviously his brother.
Said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, promise you bring his brother home. Yeah. So he joins the other gang, and you instantly get the impression that it's Rama's first gig, because they're talking about going there and that there's so many probationers and new officers there who haven't done this before.
Yeah, and you get one of them is a bit scared, and you can tell, and it's quite, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and one of them's kind of shaking, isn't he?
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Yeah, I'd be shitting my pants, to be honest. And so
I wouldn't, because I did judo for a year, so I'd be fine.
You did wrestling.
Oh, don't start this again, Christ.
You did. Everyone listened to the wrestling podcast.
The problem is, though, with that is I'll be able to pick them up and then safely put them down without hurting them, which probably wouldn't help.
But you'd only be able to put them down for 3 seconds, then you'd have to let them go.
Yes, yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem, too. That could be a bit of a snag, really, when going into a building like this, but yes.
You'd need ropes to bounce them off and stuff like that. Yeah, just be wearing your pants.
I would need ropes to bounce them off, yeah.
But if anyone wants to listen to our wrestler podcast, a review with Mickey Rourke, obviously not he's on the podcast, but he's in the film, it's well worth listening, because you get an insight into the film, which was a really, really good film. But you also get an insight into the history and the career of your wrestling career, James, really, from
you
when
do,
it started.
You to do, you do. I would forward that bit, but I think, unfortunately, Stu refers to it throughout the podcast. So.
I do, because I like to give credit where it's due, and you took the time to do the training and the knowledge for wrestling, and it needs to be spoken about. It isn't done in a piss-take fashion. I don't need to get misunderstood, you know?
Yes.
Oh, quickly, tangent in. Chris asked me the other day, who's a listener to the podcast, he said, you haven't done Ghostbusters, the original. And I thought we'd done it. So I went through the whole list of 100 and how many other. We've never done Ghostbusters. Why is that?
I don't know, really. Probably because I don't know. I think we need to stick that one on the list after Justice League, maybe, then, G.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I thought we would have done it, but especially when the female, the modern version of Ghostbusters came out, which we spoke about last week.
That's just upsetting, that one.
Yeah, but we'll have to put it onto the list. Anyway, tangenting back again. So they decide that they're going to go in floor by floor, room by room, to get rid of the gangs, because you find out that the gangs are also various gang drug dealers and drug users. Live on each floor of this building, and they pay rent to Tama, and in turn they're his protection, and that they can deal drugs and take drugs without any worries or any concerns of the police raiding their building.
Yeah, because obviously it's quite clear that the police are too scared to go there, and this is like an operation that's never happened before. What I was concerned about this film going in, and luckily it wasn't the case, was I thought. And I'm not slagging Game of Death off, but I thought it would be very Bruce Lee Game of Death, where they'll go up. It would almost be like a computer game where they'll ascend up to the top where the evil boss is, and each floor would get harder, kind of thing, with different bad guys. And I thought, okay, that'll be interesting to see if it's like that and how they do it. But luckily, I think they didn't do it, and I think it would have been very tempting to do something like that. But it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Which.
But what this film is very much like is like Dread with Carl. Is it Carl Urban?
Carl Urban. Yeah. We've reviewed that as well.
Very much. We have indeed, and it's very much the same kind of premise with regards to locked in a building and have to make it up to the drug dealer, and they're being taken out by gangs. It's exactly the same, but it's obviously done in a martial arts kind of style rather than a shoot 'em up style, like very much like Doom and things like that. But if you like that film, then you're going to like this film. If you like martial arts, you're definitely going to like this film. That's what I think. But, I mean, it didn't take long, and I timed it. It took 5 minutes and 10 seconds into the film until we meet Tama and learn how vicious he is. When he's in his office, actually, obviously in the tower, when he's got four of his goons in front of him, and he shoots four of them in the back of the head. And you actually see that. They don't kind of hold back and leave it anything to the imagination. They actually do shoot four of them in the back of the head. And then he runs out of bullets, so he goes and gets a hammer, and he smashes a hammer into the back of the last one's head.
Interestingly, he does run out of bullets, but then when he opens the drawer, there's bullets there, and he decides he chooses the hammer over the bullets.
What do you think of that? That scene?
Yeah, I thought, okay, I initially thought we were going to have a movie cliche here, but I thought it was quite interesting to show you the whole thing, and then to kill all of them. Great, well done. But I thought it was really interesting the fact that he chose the hammer, and it did add a bit more to what is sometimes in these types of films, very cliche bad guys where they're there as the bad guy to go up against obviously the hero at some point to show how bad they are, and sometimes they're very lazily written, and I thought this is one of the few scenes where we saw him which was I was quite happy with. I thought that's quite interesting trying that, and in the space of 10 seconds they're trying to add a bit more depth to him and to show that he's actually quite ruthless.
There isn't any dialogue makes it even better. It makes it even more sinister that you don't find out why they're there. They're just lined up in a row and they witness the person next to them die in a really horrible way. And it's just convenience for Tama. And you quickly learn that he's a fucking horrible psychopath. And obviously Mad Dog's there watching. And also Andy as well, that he's standing there watching. And they show no emotion, especially Mad Dog, when he goes through and he gets the hammer and puts the hammer into the back of the guy's head. And it quickly just sums up, he's the boss, he's really evil, and he's got no conscience or morals with regards to who he's going to kill and how he'll kill them. And that was all you needed. It was really simple, wasn't it? You didn't need dialogue to say that.
No, you didn't. Unlike if George Lucas was editing this film now, he'd be like, I'm going to get the hammer because I don't need the bullets to kill you. You know what I mean? ruined it with something like that. Yeah, Darth Vader, no! I'm sorry. That still gets me to this day, that bit in Return of the Jedi, but there we go.
So upon arrival, the team goes in formation to the building, and just before they're going to enter the building, they come across a member of the public who's trying to get into the apartment, and it's number 726, which will come in later on, trying to give some medication for his wife. Did you know, or did you have a feeling that this guy may come back into it later?
I think it was obvious. It was, otherwise why? Normally I'd say why put him in there, but then I thought the other reason why you might have that you put him in there is to show that obviously the other police officer was not very nice, and our protagonist, our hero, was nice. And I thought it could also show that those two are going to have a fight at some point, and one of them's dirty and the other one's not, for example, which didn't happen.
Yeah.
So I figured it was going to be one of those two.
That's what I liked about it when I first saw it, that he's trying to help him and explain to him that this is what we're doing and you can't go up there because we need to go in there, we need to make it safe. Whereas the other guy is just fuck off, push him out of the way. The guy is obviously really scared and there's no explanation and he's just treating him like absolute shit. And I just thought it was a good way of instantly showing that Rama's new and he's got a conscience. And this other guy, he's a complete asshole. And as you said, is he an asshole because he's in on it as well?
Yeah.
Or he doesn't like the new officers, or he doesn't like members of the public, or he just doesn't want to be there? I mean, I didn't know it would come into play later on when I first watched it. I just didn't know whether it was a demonstration of the two different characters between two of the main characters, which they kind of turned out to be to a certain degree throughout the film.
Okay. I mean, I figured it'd be one of those two.
Yeah, so they continue on to the sixth floor, and it's really not far into the film before the action starts. There's not a lot of build-up to this, which, kind of, as you say, which we'll talk about throughout later on, because I've got a few thoughts about exactly the same as what you were saying at the start of the pod with regards to the fighting. But they're on one of the floors, and they're spotted by a young lad. And I really like this scene. I thought it was pretty hardcore that... He's a young lad, possibly 12.
Yep.
and he sees them, and they all in the corridor together, and it the cinematography of it is done really well, because you've got all of them in like a V shape in the corridor with their guns. Some of them have got their guns up, some of them have got their guns down, just telling the kid to calm down, don't panic. And it's a lot of tension. It's really, really good. Is he going to get shot? Is he going to be a goodie? Is he going to try and run away and alert them? You just don't know. There's a really good standoff, isn't there, in a really narrow corridor, confined space.
Oh, it was brilliant. And I think the next 5 minutes of that whole sequence, or when we're with them again, of that build-up that no one knows they're there yet and someone's going to raise the alarm, was actually really, really tense, and it was done really well. And I know what you mean with the fact that he shot that kid, and you're like, oh, you know, it was like an oh my god moment.
Yeah, you wouldn't see that in Western films. I don't think you'd actually see a kid getting shot in the throat, because he runs through one of the doors, or he presses the alarm, runs through the door, and he shouts up to one of the other little kids on the next level.
Yeah,
that it's the police, and as he's shouting that, it's the lieutenant shoots through a door.
It was, yeah,
and you see it, yeah, all in slow motion. The bullet goes through this kid's throat, and he dies. And it's fucking really brutal, isn't it?
I know, and it's a shame, Stu, that you say we wouldn't see that in a lot of the Western films. Obviously, when we do, it's going to be rated at like R8 or 18 over here in the UK. And I think that's a shame, really, because the world, let's be honest, the world is a horrible place, yeah? And that stuff, unfortunately, and it's disgusting, but that stuff's going to happen, hopefully, you know, almost on a daily basis, potentially. I mean, you know, which is absolutely disgusting. But when that's going on in the real world, then why hide it in the Western film? When especially if it's not done to make a point of how ruthless somebody is. No one wants, you know, and I know for some people that might be very, very difficult to watch, but it happens. It does happen. Yeah. And I think the interesting thing
is that for that split moment, it doesn't differentiate the cops from the baddies.
No.
That kid was unarmed, and he alerted everyone else, but the fact that he shot an unarmed kid in the throat and killed him,
rather like in the leg or something, you know.
Yeah, and it's really, really bad, and it just really raised the ante straight away of what you can expect to see during this film. And from there, I mean, Tarmac goes on like the tannoy, and he radios in for his other like reinforcements to come, and then you instantly see two snipers appear in a building. They appear, it looks like a building next door or the same building, and they've both got sniper rifles, and they shoot the two police officers who are downstairs by the front door, keeping an eye out. And one of them gets taken out and killed, and the other one they just shoot and injure, kind of very similar to Platoon, where they just want to let him die in pain and hear him cry, don't they?
Yeah,
which is. Yeah, it's pretty sickening. And from there, they cut the lights. And that's when Tama announces over the PA system that the officers are trapped on the sixth floor of the stairwell, and he'll grant free and permanent residence for anyone who kills any of the police officers, which is exactly the same as what they do in Dread. But in this, because of the violence is so apparent, and you actually see it, and they don't cut back, as I said earlier, to anyone's imagination, you really don't know how far they're going to take it and what you're going to be seeing, because these people have got machetes, they've got guns, hammers, everything, and machetes, all kind of axes. And you'd hate to be one of the police officers who gets caught, or a police officer who doesn't know martial arts, because you would be absolutely fucked. And it really raised the ante pretty quick. And I just thought it was great. I was on the edge of my seat. I wanted them to get out.
Yeah. I mean,
It was good. I mean, I just fucking love this film so much. I mean, it's 5 out of 5 straight away for me, and you're a dick if you don't give it that. But regardless, you've got your own opinion. So in the darkness, the remaining members are ambushed. And I really, really like this scene. This was great for me, where you've got, they're all crouching behind, because the way the tower block works, it's got a massive, it's very similar again to Dread, where it's got a massive gap in the middle where the stairwell and layers go around the outside of the building, don't they?
Mm.
So you can see from like from the top floor or from the floor above you to the floor down below. And all the police officers are in a line behind one of the railings on the floor below. On the seventh floor, you've got all of the a big gang of baddies with machine guns pointing down, but they can't see anything because the power's been cut.
Yep.
And then one of them shoots a shotgun, and it's all done in slow motion, and it, the effect is so good, it really good, that the kind of the blaze or the flame from the shooting the shotgun casts a shadow and alerts the baddies where all of the police officers are, and then it's just a fucking massacre, isn't it?
I know, and as you and I said about, it's not the best story in the world, and it's not. Let's be honest, it's not the, but it doesn't need to be, and I don't think you can use that to slate or berate the film too much for the story, because then with this limited story they've got things like that happen with the shotgun and how they find out, which I think are really, yeah, really almost, you know, really, really good ideas, you know, and in some ways very unique to the film, where you have to and there are things you notice, for example, on like your second or third watch of the film, these yeah, things you didn't notice on the first, that yeah, you really begin to appreciate it a lot more than and it's not where someone might look at it just a mindless martial arts action film. There is a bit more to it
for the sake of fighting.
No,
some parts of this, it's done. Yeah, it's just done really well for the right reasons. I mean, whilst they're pinned down, Lieutenant Wayu confesses to Jacka, who's like the captain in charge of the tactical team, that he staged the mission so he can eliminate Tama, who's in league with the corrupt police officials, including himself. And it's just a selfish mission that he can get rid of someone who's possibly got some weight on him,
yeah,
and that it's not a sanctioned mission and that no one else knows about it. So there is fuck all chance of getting reinforcements. So he's really put his team in the shit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And before you went in there, did you have a feeling that the lieutenant, who doesn't kind of match up with everyone else in that team, he doesn't fit in, he doesn't look right, that he should actually be there, did you think that that will be the case, that he will be in on it or not really?
Well, yeah, because he was a lot older than all the teams. I didn't know whether he'll be on it initially. When I first saw his character, I thought, wrongly in the end, that he's going to be the wise old man, like the Obi-Wan to everyone, and then get killed by like one of the big bad guys near the end, and they all get annoyed. That's what I initially thought. This was within the first 5-6 minutes of the film. I thought he's going to be the wise one that's really good at martial arts as well, and like the father, yeah, figure to maybe like the hero or somebody in the end. And it didn't. And yeah, it almost went left field and didn't quite happen, and almost went the other way, which I thought was interesting, because throughout the film, there's a couple of scenes where we slowly begin to find more and more about him, and which is, you know, the few pills around his character that he does have start to like come off, and you see him for who he really is, especially right at the end.
Yeah, they kind of lay the cards on the table after about half an hour or so, yeah, don't they, regarding who's good, who's bad, what their current situation is, and what they need to do to get out of it. And as you said earlier, it's a very simple storyline which could be lost if the the martial arts and the kind of the sub story around it wasn't structured right. But it's done really well, and the engine is obviously the lieutenant of what he's got to do. Then there's little subplots around it that keep the story going.
Yeah,
that's what absolutely. That's what I kind of got. But the surviving officers retreat into an empty department, where again there's more thugs who are after them, and again they've all got bloody machetes and everything like that. So they try and create an escape route. They're in this apartment, and the people are trying to get in. They've got just guns. That's all they've got, and they haven't got many of them. And a lot of the officers who are with them are injured, some of them fatally. So and they're shooting through the door, and then one of the officers looks out the window. He gets shot in the face by one of the snipers. So they know they just can't get out of this room.
No.
So I love what Rama does with the fridge. He puts a gas cylinder in the fridge, and he puts a hand grenade in it, and he opens it up and takes out shitloads of baddies who are waiting on the other side. I thought that was really, really good. It was just spontaneous fucking action that
it wasn't. I thought it wasn't a hand grenade. I thought it was a gas canister rather than an actual grenade. No.
Oh yeah, you put a gas canister in the fridge and threw a hand grenade in there.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the gas canister and the hand grenade. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, and and the baddies just keep going, and they keep coming to try and take him out. So Rama gets an axe and he cuts a hole in the floor, so the team can escape to the floor below. But when one of them goes through, he instantly jumps into shitloads of other baddies, and then Rama, very selfless, he goes through to rescue his officer Bowo, who gets injured. I think he gets cut or shot, and he basically. That's the first time you really see Aku Weiss use his karate and start to kick people's ass. And
oh yeah,
it's for me. It's not. I love Crouching Tiger and I loved that Flying Daggers, but this is just hardcore karate or the actual karate style that they're using, which I'd never fucking heard of. But it's just martial arts. It's amazing. Martial arts that they're doing, the Penaxilla, it's so fast, and it's not done like the when you get a Western guy who's doing the karate where it's slow just for his benefit because he's not as skilled. These are all people who are highly trained and highly skilled in that martial art, and I think the payoff of having that is the film flows, and all the fight scenes flow so fast, don't they?
They do. And what is nice when you say it's not Western, it's not a lot of the time. In the fights, it's not them all queuing up waiting nicely in line to try and hit the hero. I mean, you got a time where there's two or three on him at the same time, which is quite good because, you know, although it probably isn't, it feels when you're watching it, oh, this is very realistic of what might happen. You know, I was thinking somewhat naively, probably not, but you feel it's a lot more realistic than some martial art films and the way some of the stuff we use, and also because potentially some of the blood and gore as well, which does help that realism. And what I like about it though is it doesn't, for example, like in the scene with Kill Bill, it doesn't go overkill to almost comic proportions. Which is good.
Yeah, people get an injury, they are injured, they are down, and as you said earlier,
yeah, but there's not like 5 pints of blood spurting out their neck, for example, like in some films, you know.
Yeah, and when you said that they're not queuing up, it's such an awful trope that you do get in these films where they are around in a circle and it's as if they're taking turns into attack, as if they all attacked, they'd fuck them up pretty quick and it'll be over. But that's what they do with this.
And it must be really, really difficult. For example, I'm filming it in what are these quite like cramped almost corridors, and it reminded me a bit of one of the Daredevil's best martial arts scenes, if you remember, was in the corridor, you know, in season one when he goes and a lot of it reminded me Daredevil, obviously, you can see where maybe they've taken some ideas from the Raid Daredevil, but yeah, it reminded me of that. And it made me I was really, really impressed what they managed to do within such a confined space, and the confined space was used to such an extent. I think sometimes it was another character, obviously, in that scene.
Yeah, a lot of it when you watch on the making of it, a lot of it's down to the way that Evans has edited this, because they'll do their some of the fight scenes, and then they'll stop. Just purely because of they're going to film from another angle, or the people are absolutely crackered, and it's edited so well that the flow of it is absolutely brilliant, and you don't notice that it's been edited. It looks like the same scene but from a different angle, and just seeing that and just the way it flows through such good editing, and whether that's because Evans went over to Indonesia and actually saw the Penaxilla being taught, and actually the fighting, the combat side of it, and having Yayan and Weiss there as well to do the choreography. I think that has been a massive payoff, that you've got people who understand it, and that helps for the flow of the choreography as well. Because if it was done by somebody who didn't understand it, I think the payoff just wouldn't have been the same. I think it would have been really stop start, or it would have been continuous but a hell of a lot slower. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So whilst the team go down to the lower floor, they do run out of ammunition, and there's upon a bad reinforcements who are coming to try and take them down, so they split. So Jaka and Deku, Lieutenant Y, retreat to the fifth floor, while Rama and Bowo, who's and one of his colleagues who's injured, they go up a floor and they're trying to seek refuge. And that's when the guy from number 726 comes back into it, where they're trying to find basically somewhere that where he can leave his mate. He dumps his mate there and his mate does get some treatment. And Rama pleads for help with the tenant. And I think, again, the payoff, because he didn't treat him like a complete dick and he wasn't a shit to him, that he does help him. And his wife doesn't really want him to get involved in it, but he just reluctantly helps the officer and he hides him in his apartment. And this next scene, I really like this next scene, because you do get five machete-wielding idiots who come in and they tear the room apart. It's only a one-room apartment and they're hiding behind like a second wall. And as they're hiding behind there, his mate's obviously really badly injured and they start sticking a machete through this wall. And it's so good, because you think one of them's going to die, one of them's going to get injured. And he sticks the machete through the wall and it slices through Rama's cheek and he leaves the machete sliced through his cheek. And
yeah,
I love that scene. I don't know what you thought about.
This is great. This is the best scene from a cinematic point of view in the film. It's the most tense scene. The fact that they're stuffed in, first of all, you don't know whether the guy is going to turn around and go, "No, actually, F off." And you think, "Oh, he's just the same as everyone else." Then he opens the door. Then he comes in this gap and you see how small the gap is and the way it's shot and edited and the use of camera, where you really feel how claustrophobic this is. And I know, obviously, the injured cop, he's kind of like over exaggerating, unfortunately a lot of these films do in some of their acting when they're in pain, but it doesn't really take away too much from this scene, and it's so claustrophobic, and they're so stuck, and they kind of have to do it. They got no choice. But then you've got will he sell them out? Are they going to threaten are they going to threaten the wife?
Yeah.
And there's so much going on, and it's shot so well, and it's so tense. And you're right, when he uses the sword and it's up against his cheek and cutting his cheek, you're like, oh my god. Yeah, and it's done so well. And for me, in terms of from a cinematic point of view, this is the best scene in the film.
Oh, that's interesting to know. So once his mates all kind of settled, Rama leaves the apartment to go out looking for help, and he goes off to the 8th floor, where again he's cornered by the machete wielding guy, this massive black guy, and he's the guy who's the former judo champion. Yeah. And the fight he has with him is superb. I mean,
his goons as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he properly fucks them up. I mean, it is so good. It's so quick. And you don't feel as if it's stopped. You feel as if it's being continuously shot from different cameras. The editing, the choreography, like a lot of it through this film, is absolutely mind-blowing. It's really, really intense. And I didn't think it was fighting for the sake of fighting, because they all come at him at once.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
And it is just really, really good. And you really get the impression he is genuinely fighting for his life. He's not fighting because he enjoys it. He's just fighting to survive. And it's so intense up until where he actually takes that guy and jumps out the window and lands on the balcony a couple of floors below.
And the guy died. Yeah, that was like, what the hell? That was like a Mission Impossible-esque kind of stunt.
Yeah, I just thought it was just such an exciting fight. I really didn't. I didn't think it could get any better than that, but it did. And it kind of the bit we're coming to in a minute, but so he makes his way. So Rama makes his way to the 6th floor, mm-hmm. where he is in such a bad way from jumping through the window, where he's grabbed, and you find it's grabbed by a guy who you don't really see. He doesn't have much dialogue, but who's initially seen in the first scene when the guys are being killed, who's Andy, who's his brother. And I really like the conversation that they've both had together, that you kind of, Rama's good as a policeman, and Andy admits, well, I found something I'm really good at, yes. And that's being someone who's a bad guy, who's dealing drugs and making money. And mum and dad would say, I was never good at anything, and I've proven them wrong because I'm good at this. And he says, no, come with me. And he says, well, no, that uniform looks good on you and you're good at what you're doing, and this is my uniform and I'm good at what I'm doing. And it's a real, it's not a mushy conversation. It's a really honest conversation that he's lost his brother, and but let's get on with it. And I do love you, but I live a different life to you, and that's it. And it's nice that they don't end up fighting each other. It's not like a...
Yeah, I thought that might happen, and I was like, oh, really? Really? I mean, that would have been very tropey, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because it's not a case of, if I have to take you down, I will do. It's a case of, you're my brother, and I love you, and I don't like the decisions you've made, but at the end of the day, more than anything, you're my brother.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I that was really, really refreshing to me, because it could have got really, really tropey otherwise.
Absolutely. That they absolutely.
Each other.
It could have got very tropey. You're right about that, definitely.
And so they kind of just agree to disagree, don't they? And that they're going to live their life differently, and but they're always going to be brothers. And this next scene is one of the... It's just such a good fight scene. It's where Mad Dog discovers Jacka, who's like the sergeant and kind of leader of the tactical team. And he tells... They're kind of cornered, and Lieutenant Wine runs off, and Jacka instructs Dagu, who's like a new officer, to protect him. And he'll stay there to like kind of fight the last fight, as it was. And he runs into Mad Dog, and Mad Dog's got him cornered, and he's at gunpoint, and he puts down his gun, and it just, he says that, I love killing people with my hands. I love the feeling of their life.
I know. And I thought, like, oh my God. And I think you needed this in the film to show how, I mean, it got mentioned that this guy's really dangerous, and you saw how good he is. And there was almost a sense of honour in how it was done, rather than not shooting with a gun. And it was almost like, well, if you're better than me, then you'll get away, basically.
It was refreshing that it's not, there was nothing, there is nothing macho about Mad Dog. He's a little geezer who looks quite old, with a ponytail, and he's really, really slim. And I mean, by the age of 13, he started to do the Penicillin. So he's been doing it all his life. And he's a really slim guy, really small in physique. But this fight is so intense that I feel sorry for the police officer who's fighting for his life and just not doing very well. And he's trying, and Mad Dog is enjoying every single injury, and it's almost as if the weaker the police officer gets, the more he struggles. You can see visibly the more Mad Dog's enjoying it, and it's not in a way a macho way. It's in a way of just
kind of sadistic almost, doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's it. It's sadistic. It's really, really horrible. It's kind of like torture, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he kills him just by breaking his neck, and he can feel the death, like the life leaving the guy's body. And again, when Rama's looking out of the door, he just sees Mad Dog dragging the cop down the corridor with blood coming out of him. He's clearly dead, just like a piece of meat.
Yeah.
And it's just such a, it's a really sad scene, but it's really intense, because you're really cheering for the officer to at least injure Mad Dog or just do something, but he just doesn't stand a chance, does he? And it's just such a good scene, and it's horrible in a way, but it's horrible but addictive watching, because you want to see what happens, which I think's really clever if they can do that. So after that, Mad Dog and Andy meet up and report back to Tama in the surveillance room. You get the impression that everything's going really well. And he looks, when I first watched this, I didn't know where it was going. And he says, have you got anything to tell me? And Andy's like, well, no.
I was kind of guessing where it was going when he didn't have anything on him. I thought he's either going to sell his brother out or he's in trouble. Yeah. I figured it was going to go one of those two ways, you know?
Yeah, because he says, show me your hands. And there's no blood on his hands. There's nothing compared to Mad Dog, who's covered in everyone else's blood. And then he shows in the surveillance cameras, which are scattered all around the apartment block, of him speaking to another officer, and there's clearly no fighting going on. So that's when he wants to know what's going on, and he stabs his brother through the hand and takes him away. A Mad Dog is kind of left with him. And at that point, you don't know whether you've seen the last of Andy or whether he's going to be back in it at some point, do you? Because you've just found out how sadistic that Mad Dog is by killing the other police officer.
Yeah.
So Rama discovers when they're on their way up to the room, they meet with the lieutenant and his colleague, and they basically are on their way to go and hopefully kill Tama, because they're pretty close to the floor where he's stationed there. And as he's running past his room, it looks like a kind of refrigeration room, doesn't it? It's got quite a thick metal door.
Yeah.
He hears someone having a shit beaten out of him. He looks through the window, and in fact, he sees Andy strung up, and Mad Dog is just beating the crap out of him. And this fight, this is just a fucking great
fight.
This
was the best fight in the film, let's be honest. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, if the other fights were 8 out of 10, this was like an 11, I felt. It ended up being both brothers fighting, obviously this badass Mad Dog, who pretty much nearly wins, but there's much more to it than just that. It was really, really good.
Yeah, and as you say, it's not a case of one has a go, the other has a go. They're both kind of going through it multiple times, and it's not done in a way which is stupid, and that people sustain injuries, and those injuries do affect them throughout the fight, and it does slow them down, and it's just such an intense fight when you've got the two brothers there who are finally kind of forgot about their differences of one being bad, the other one being a police officer. They're both fighting for the same cause, and it's just so good because Mad Dog is so good in his martial arts that he's so relentless, and he keeps coming back again and again. And as you say, he does get the better of him throughout the fight, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And when you look at it, you know that if it was just one of the brothers, they'd lose. This guy's too much of a badass. Yeah. We didn't know though at the time. Andy came across as a bit of a wimp initially when he got stabbed with the thing, because there was no fight in him. And I'm thinking, okay, that's a bit weird. And we hadn't seen what he's really capable of until now.
Yeah, and it was exactly. And I don't know whether he didn't put up a fight because he knows how good Mad Dog is, that there is no point putting up a fight. But yeah, he's very good at martial arts himself. He's probably at that moment better than Rama, isn't he?
Yeah, but potentially. Well, yeah.
But it's not done. The fight, it's hard to describe unless you've seen it, because it's just a fight. But Mad Dog doesn't win because he's got any kind of superpowers or that he can fly higher through the air or anything like that. It's just done on ability, and that's what I like about it. It's just pure ability that allows him to get the upper hand on both of these guys.
You're right, but the only thing I didn't like about the fight was how they got the upper hand in the end. For me, I didn't like that. It was such a good fight, and I almost thought it was an almost cheap way out. I mean, I like the fact that the way he died with it was interesting, but watching it the second time, I was enjoying it because I was like, but I knew where it was going, and I felt that. That was one of just the few things I didn't like about the fight. That was the only one. Well, no, not the few. Sorry, the only thing I personally didn't like about the fight. I mean, what was your opinion on that?
I enjoyed it, and I like the fact that, I mean, they broke a tube light in and they stuck a piece of the glass into his throat and killed him. And it was quite good because they couldn't kill him through doing their martial arts. They had to kill him with using like a foreign object rather than their fists, and that was the difference between both of their abilities.
I get that.
Demonstrated that Mad Dog had the upper hand, but I mean, why didn't you like it?
Because I thought it was such a good fight scene. I thought it almost cheated the fight scene itself, and I wanted the two brothers to overcome him somehow and beat him with martial arts. Now I get your point that it was so good they almost needed to use it, but it was almost like using a cheap tactic to win, and I felt that took a tiny bit away from what was the best fight in the whole film.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I completely understand. I mean, I think it's just opinion, isn't it? I like the fact that on ability, they didn't stand a chance, despite there was two of them. But even then, when he had a piece of glass in his throat, he still didn't go down easy, did he?
No, he didn't.
Stuck in his throat and ripped out. But yeah, it was, as you say, it was the best. For me, it was the best fight in the whole film, and there was a lot of fights. But again, the surprises don't stop there, because Lieutenant Wayu and Dagu confront Tama in the building, and he's talking about, okay, we'll arrest you. and Wayu ends up betraying Dagu by just turning around and shooting him in the face and killing him before taking Talma hostage. I mean, when I first watched that, I didn't see that coming whatsoever, but I suppose it made sense that it had to happen, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did. It did have to happen. And then obviously he takes it, and then he obviously grabs obviously the big boss, and then takes him down the stairs. I don't know what he's really, really planning to do. No one really knows. Him like hostage or something, but he ends up shooting him, and then trying to shoot himself.
Yeah, as they go down, Talma, when they bump into Rama and Andy, are also leaving the building. Talma shouts out, revealing of Wayu's betrayal and what he's been waiting for and why he did the raid, and telling them how corrupt he is. And it's really good because it plays into the second one as well, that he goes to kill himself just out of pure shame, and there are no bullets in the gun.
Yeah.
So they just arrest him, and by the help of Andy, who's, due to the fact that everyone else is dead, he's been promoted in charge, and he escorts his brother out, and he injured Boho from the building and out of the premises, and they leave. One bit that I didn't mention about, which when you've got the two at the start of the film, when you've got the two officers inside the truck, the tactical truck, which they all arrived in, and they all get shot to fuck. I mean, what did you think of that scene?
I was like, oh my God. I mean, it was just overwhelming.
That was way over the top violence, wasn't it?
yeah, it really was. I mean, you kind of saw it coming because they're having a conversation. Like, okay, we've not met these two. It almost felt like it's too far in the film to introduce any big new characters.
They didn't have name badges or anything, did they? No, they were going to die.
You knew they were screwed. But it was like oh my gosh, you know. And it was right about it was about the same time that obviously the bad guys were taking control again of the building.
Yeah, and there was another scene where I don't know if it's Rama or not. I'm not too sure who it is, but when they're fighting and he kind of flips him over, pushes the baddie's head against the floor and shoots him in the head twice. And again, you see everything. There's no holding back. It's left for you to see. The fight scenes are really, it's just various deaths. Where Rama grabs the guy and pulls him forwards to his front over an open door, which is broken at the bottom, and puts the shears of wood into his throat and kills him. I mean, there's so many various gory, bloody death scenes in this film that, and I think because it moves so fast, you're not left dwelling on it, the violence, are you? Because it moves then on to the next scene.
Essentially.
So they leave and. They're all good, and they've killed Talma, but they've got the bad guy, who's a lieutenant in the end, and then the film ends. So what did you think of that film? What did you think of the raid? You hadn't seen it before. We've not spoken about it before, have we? This is the first time, so
this is the first time we've spoken about it. I really liked it. I think it'd be wrong to really slag it off from the story. I mean, you had that awesome fight in there, which was good. The weakest of the main characters is obviously the lieutenant. It's a shame that it kind of like ended with it the way he did. I mean, if you wanted to do a plot twist, I would have had the lieutenant in charge of the building the whole time, and or done some weird. Bizarre plot twist is the reason why you need to do it to make him out to be a badder guy, because he's like essentially the last guy standing. And it's a shame that the two brothers didn't, and it was lieutenant that obviously got the big boss guy, you know. Which is a tiny blight on the film. I did really enjoy it, those two.
Excellent. I bet you bloody pained you to say that, doesn't it?
No. But I'm not giving it a five. I'm giving it a 4.5 because of like the tiny little niggly bits. However, Stu, I'm going to watch it again, and I'll probably watch it a couple of times. So in 6 months' time, if you ask me, it may well be a five because I'm sure there's loads of things I've missed by only watching it twice. I mean, that even you picked on. But 4.5, and I thought it was a really, really enjoyable, and it's very different. It's not your typical Hong Kong type like. Martial arts flick. It's really, as you said, very much like if Judge Dredd did the, you know, did like was a martial art film enjoyed. Yeah. This would be it. And other than that, and they're just literally little niggling points. And it's not that long. It's just over the one and a half hour mark. When you look at it, it's really enjoyable. It's one of those films you could probably pick up 2-3 times a year if you wanted to and watch, and you'd get something out of it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, for me, it's a 5. I really like this film. It's a go-to film. I must admit, I don't have any niggles about the film at all. I mean, just out of interest, did you watch the subtitled version or the?
No, I watched it. I think that's the best way of watching them, because you see what they're actually saying. I don't have too much faith in the dubs, and sometimes the dubbed version takes. I used to prefer watching the dubbed version. And I think when you're not watching the film properly, it's probably, you know, it's not so bad, but
yeah,
you know, I think it would have been really unfair if I had not watched the subtitle version since we were reviewing it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I watched the subtitle version, and then I watched the dub version just to see what the difference would be. But yeah, I just love this film. It's my go-to film. It's really good, and it's a really serious, it is an extremely violent film. And as I've been saying throughout the pod, that the fight scenes are choreographed so well because they're done by people who know and understand and can give guidance. And it's filmed and directed by people who understand how to film fight scenes properly, which make a hell of a difference. And it's the fight scenes aren't done in the drunk style Jackie Chan climbing up stuff and flicking shelves onto people and just kind of clumsy martial arts. It's all very precise. It's all very clean cut martial arts, isn't it? It's a serious fight scene, serious film. And I think to maintain that throughout and not get bored of the fight scenes is a credit to everyone involved, like the choreographers and everyone. It's a really, really good film. It's a 5 out of 5. That if you can find the second one carries on literally straight from the first one.
Oh, wow.
And the second one is just as good, as in lieutenants in it. And it just carries on straight away through the same characters. And it's such a good film. The fight scenes are just unbelievable. And the violence doesn't stop. There's two really good characters in there. One female with a hammer and one guy with a baseball bat.
Okay.
They're really original killers, contract killers. They're absolutely brilliant. And there's a fight scene in the kitchen with a guy who's a SILAT specialist. Again, he's trained, but he's also, his daytime job is a school teacher. He has got one of the best fight scenes in any martial arts film in a kitchen. Yeah. And it is such a good film. It's just as good as the first one, like my personal opinion. I'd love to know what you think. And again, it stars Yayan Ruan, which confused me when I first watched it, because I thought, surely he died. And they're using the same characters, but it's interesting. They used him again, but as another character, which is a bit weird. But he's a likable character in this, even though he plays a psychopath and an assassin. He's quite a likable character. But anyone, it's a 2014, The Raid. Totally recommend it, and I'd love to know if you ever get time to watch it, or you can find it to watch it, to watch the second one, because it's just
maybe some point this year or next year we end up, I'm sure we'll end up reviewing it to you at some point. So.
Yeah, cause I watched both of them one after the other, much to my wife's disappointment, who fell asleep on the sofa just for the podcast, because I've forgotten how good they are, and they're part of the same story. But yeah, so next on the pod floor. Correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to be another go-to film for myself.
Yes.
It's going to be Lucy.
It is.
Another film that you haven't seen before.
No, so it'd be interesting. This is, well, a lot. I imagine it's a lot different. I'm looking forward to that. And we're going to see.
And then after that, it's going to be a film that I've only ever seen once. And obviously Simon's going to join us on the pod, because it's a film he's very passionate about.
Absolutely.
Doing Batman versus Superman.
Yes.
Yeah, and I really don't know, because I don't really remember it that well. All I remember is Batman wearing his goggles in a desert. That's the only lasting memory I've got of that film. And that's it. So I don't know what side of the fence that I'm going to fall on with regards to how I'm going to feel about the film, but I've got a rough idea that you're going to be loathing every single minute.
Yep, pretty much, unfortunately. I'm so sorry. I probably will be loathing every single minute.
But for anyone who's listening, if they watch Lucy, they can watch the film, then listen to the podcast and see if they agree with our points of view. And also recommend anyone checking out The Raid 1 and 2 as well.
Absolutely. Well, I guess, guys, we'll see you next time for Lucy.
Excellent. Thanks for listening.